We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
It was hot this weekend, humid this weekend. It's going to continue. If your home is uncomfortable when you're in it and the air condition is on full blast 24/7, it's probably high time that you replace your old windows. And right now, Window Nation is offering their best offer of the year. Get 50% off all window styles. No interest paid until the year 2030. 5 years of 0% interest. They'll get the job done in one day. They'll leave your home looking nicer than when they entered it. The actual estimate free in-home will take an hour or less. It's convenient all the way around. They've got the best product. They handle you, the customer, in a way in which you deserve to be handled. They are number one in customer service. They've got over 40,000 five-star reviews. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com to get your free quote now. Again, 50% off on all window styles, and you don't pay any interest for 5 full years. If you are running that air conditioning 24/7, your windows are too old and they're not insulated nearly as good as they should be, please call Window Nation and just give them a shot. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. So ESPN is in the midst of doing this thing that they do. I mean, they've done this for 5 or 6 years, I believe, where they poll top coaches, front office execs, and scouts, and ask them to rank their top 10 based on position groups. They've done running backs already. They've done D tackles, edge rushers, safeties, tight ends, interior offensive linemen, tackles, and today, quarterbacks. They still have off-ball linebackers, so non-edge players, wide receivers, and corners to go this week. So we'll see what the wide receiver list produces on, I think it's Wednesday, they come out with the wide receivers. So far on the list, Washington has had Laremy Tunsil on the list. He was seventh among offensive tackles. Sam Cosmi was also receiving votes. I think Brian Robinson Jr. got also receiving votes. But typically what they do is a top 10, then they do 5 players of honorable mention, and then there are a bunch of players that, you know, got votes. So the quarterback list came out today. And they ranked him top 10. Then they have, after their top 10, they have, actually, honorable mention, they only have 2 quarterbacks. And then they have several that got also receiving votes. So this is, again, like we did this, and we've done this a few times, obviously, in the offseason. But this is not, you know, a Pete Prisco list or, you know, an analyst on Fox Sports. This is, you know, ESPN polling people in the league, coaches, scouts, front office execs, asking them to vote the top 10 players at the position in order. And then they gather all of the data and they put together the final list. So number one on the list of quarterbacks in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes. They write, Mahomes' grip on the top spot is loosening slightly after dominating the voting with back-to-back number one rankings in convincing fashion. Mahomes garnered around 60% of the first-place votes this year, which is still impressive but well short of last year when he received all but one first-place vote. You know, we know why. It hasn't been as impressive offensively. The team around him hasn't been as impressive. He finished 8th in QBR the past 2 years from he has finished 8th in QBR the past 2 years. From 2018 through 2022, he finished 1st or 2nd 4 times. And they write, rarely does Mahomes look as frazzled as he did versus Philadelphia in the Super Bowl. Yeah, I mean, that was a dominating performance, and Mahomes and the Chiefs didn't cross half field, midfield, on their first nine drives. Number one, though, is Mahomes. Number two is Josh Allen. Allen's standing in our top 10 series has been a journey and a point of contention in Buffalo since the series started in 2020. Allen's place in the quarterback pantheon has been universally celebrated among voters inside the league and highlighted in this piece annually. He became, though, unquestionably a top-shelf quarterback in the league this past season when he won the MVP. Yeah, Josh Allen at number two. Let me just tell you, so far, I'm fine with this list. I would still have Mahomes one, and I would have Josh Allen two. Then comes the first debate here. Who's three? Well, on this list, front office execs, coaches, and scouts say that Joe Burrow is the third best quarterback in the league, ahead of Lamar Jackson. This is the first area of controversy. But I'm going to tell you right now, I agree with this. I think I would go Burrow 3 and Jackson 4. And I love Lamar Jackson, and he got so much better. Here's what's written, or at least some of it, that's written about Joe Burrow. And let me give you a couple of quotes. From an AFC scout, a veteran AFC scout, quote, "If we're talking about playing the quarterback position, nobody is playing it better than him, Burrow. Footwork, ball placement, the mental game at the line of scrimmage, feel for the pocket, eye level, finding creases to step up and throw. He's the best right now, and he's more mobile than he gets credit for." Another AFC executive did say, "I get the guy has two elite wideouts, but their run game was average and the offensive line was not very good either. On top of all of that, their defense was porous and he kept them in every single game for the most part. I thought it may have been his best year, but it didn't get the same pub because of the other high profile teams." Obviously, Baltimore and Buffalo, the 1-2 in the MVP voting was Allen Jackson, and both of those teams were much better teams than the Bengals were last year. But they've got Burrow 3 on this list, and then comes Lamar at 4. What's written here is Jackson is the most breathtaking player in the game. He might be the most feared, too, depending on whom you ask. And he was close to winning a third MVP last season. In fact, beating out the actual MVP, Allen, for first-team All-Pro status in an unusual split of those honors. You know what? I had forgotten about that. Jackson was named first-team All-Pro. Josh Allen, second-team All-Pro, and Josh Allen was the MVP. One more MVP for Lamar Jackson puts him on the short list of Manning, Rodgers, Brady, Favre, Brown, and Unitas. All right, so those are the quarterbacks that have won three or more. What Jackson did last year still puts him in his own class. He became the first player in NFL history with 40 passing touchdowns and four or fewer interceptions in a season. Here's some of the quotes from people in the league. This is a defensive coordinator. "Best space runner in the NFL, and he's such a good passer now. He probably doesn't get enough credit for how he's improved there." Last year, there was so much improvement with him as a passer. A veteran NFL personnel person said, quote, I think he had to grow up as a passer. He was always more athletic than everyone else, so why not run? But he had to stay in the pocket a little bit more to prolong his career, and he's doing that increasingly well." Jackson, fourth on the list. So, who's fifth? Our guy, Jaden Daniels, fifth. Voted on by coaches, scouts, front office execs. When we had this conversation a few weeks ago, some of you were right with me when I put him no worse than fifth. I just can't find a quarterback after those first four that I think teams wouldn't swap with our guy. It's just impossible for me to think that even a guy like Justin Herbert, that they wouldn't swap Herbert for Daniels, given Daniels' clutch gene, something that Herbert doesn't really seem to have at this point. Jaden Daniels came in fifth. Here's what's written. I'm going to read the whole thing. Daniels' phenomenal rookie season demanded an appearance somewhere in the top 10. That he pushed his way into the top five, narrowly outdistancing Stafford. Stafford was sixth in the voting. Shows voters have no problem validating his hype. Last season, Daniels posted the fourth highest QBR in the NFL, the best mark for a rookie since Dak Prescott in 2016. But he was even better on third and fourth downs, recording a league-leading 95.3 QBR on those downs. This from an NFL coordinator who prepared for Daniels last year. Quote, single-handedly, he took one of the worst franchises to the NFC title game as a rookie with a bad defense, one legitimate wide receiver, a dinosaur at tight end. That's a bit of a shot at Zach Ertz. And an average at best offensive lineman. The kid can read coverages, throw with accuracy and touch to all levels of the field, just as dangerous as Lamar and Josh Allen with his legs, and has a clutch factor to him because his team already believes that if he has the ball with a chance to win, he's going to find a way. If he repeats anything close to his rookie year, he's no lower than number three on this list next year. I mean, that's what we talked about. Like, Burrow and, you know, Lamar, because of their injuries, you know, could you put them ahead of those guys? Not yet. Five is the right spot. Here's another quote in this. Let me read a little bit more from the ESPN guys. Daniels was a true dual threat in his rookie year, ranking second in the NFL in yards per rush and first in scramble yards. Sometimes the year one hype can be tough to replicate. C.J. Stroud landed at number seven last season on this list and struggled at times in year two. Though he has shown enough to convince Houston, he's clearly the long-term answer. Some around the league are at least asking the question of whether Daniels' play will taper off a bit as defenses adjust to both him and Washington's offense. The consensus is Daniels has too much going for him. Here's a quote from an NFC coordinator. Quote, won 12 games with a mediocre at best defense and just a decent offensive roster around him. System he plays in requires him to play off schedule and make plays with his feet on a regular basis for success. And he is yet still solid in the pocket. Close quote. Yeah, I like that first quote from an NFL coordinator who prepared for him last year. Single-handedly took one of the worst franchises to the NFC title game as a rookie with a bad defense, one legitimate wide receiver, a dinosaur at tight end, and an average at best O-line. He did it all last year. There just wasn't anything that you could look at and say, well, that's a weakness. He's got to get better at that. And, you know, a guy like Lamar, a guy like Josh Allen early in his career, there was a lot to point to say, yeah, but not with him. There's no but. The but is what it was last year. He's somewhat thin, somewhat wiry. He'll take some shots that he probably shouldn't take, although he got better than that. He got hurt a little bit here and there in college. He missed, you know, the majority of a game last year, almost missed the next game, but didn't. That's the thing that, if anything, you worry about. All right, 301-230. Bobby Blanco from Masson. We'll talk Nats draft at 1140. Phone lines are open now, 301-230-0980. The rest of the list I'll give you after Jaden. But are you in agreement that Jaden is number five on the best quarterbacks in the league on that list? Is number five right, or is it too high? Other than Billy and Chantilly, I would assume most of you don't think he should be any higher than five. After one season, I don't. I mean, I think next year, as that one scout said or one coordinator said, that if he repeats anything close to his rookie year, he's no lower than number three on this list next year. I totally agree with that. And I think he would probably be ahead of maybe Burrow and Jackson as a possibility. There are other quarterbacks that could be coming this year. I'll give you the rest of the list. Phone lines are open, 301-230-0980. Is number five on the list of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, voted on by coaches, scouts, front office execs. Is it too high or is it just right? 301-230-0980. And if you want to weigh in on Burrow ahead of Jackson, that seems to be a big controversy in the follow-up conversation on this list. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. You can watch us, stream us on the team980.com, and you can watch us on our YouTube channel, the Team980's YouTube channel. Subscribe to it when you get there and also like it.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it?
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Yeah. Hey, Joe. One of the greatest to ever do it for our franchise, number seven, is with us, Joe Theismann. You know what I was just thinking about during the break? We're talking about, you know, Terry McLaurin's press conference and this contract, you know, situation. And the context is they're in this, you know, potential Super Bowl window. These are much better conversations, even though they are, you know, polarizing in some ways, than investigations and congressional hearings and all the things that we've had to talk about over the last 20 years. This is like real stuff having to do with a team that could be really good this year. Isn't that nice?
It really is. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Joe?
I'm good. It's, you know, we get to talk football. Unfortunately, it's one of the ancillary aspects of football, but we get to talk about football and the franchise and, you know, the decisions that they have to make, not only with Terry, but I think going forward with other players, maybe we'll get an indication of the way Adam likes to and wants to approach negotiations.
Yes. Yeah, so let's start with the news. You know, Terry held this very long press conference yesterday. He's clearly unhappy. He's hurt. You know, you could sense that, that this hasn't gotten done and that they don't seem to see him the same way he and his agent see himself. What are your thoughts on this situation right now? Because you just said something about Adam Peters, and I've talked about this. This may be the team's style. This is the first real contract situation they've had since they took over the team.
It really is. It's the first opportunity to really see something public, I guess you could say, other than re-signing some guys, which made sense anyway. I think what I sensed listening to the conversation or the press conference was frustration. And I think any time there's a lack of communication, there's frustration, whether it be from management to player or player to management. And that's what I sense over the last 30 days, Terry's heard nothing. You know, I think that's all we really ask for is just give me an idea where I am. Give me an idea where we are. Evidently, they made an offer, and there hasn't been anything since then. So, I understand the frustration. And when you look around the league at the numbers the quarterbacks are getting, and I took the top 10 yesterday and decided to do a little research. Terry's at 15.5 for this year as a salary base. Jamar's at 40-plus. Jefferson's at 35, CD's at 34, DK's at 33, AJ's at 32, Amon-Ra St. Brown's at 30, Brandon Ayuk's at 30, Tyreek Hill's at 30, who I think is underpaid, yep, by the way. T. Higgins, 28, and Jalen Waddle's at 28.
Right.
And Terry's at 15. I would put Terry above some of these guys on this list, but again, each team has to evaluate the economics of what they believe that position is worth. But there's so much more to Terry McLaurin than just numbers. You know, 82 catches, 13 touchdowns. There's so much more than those statistics. His leadership ability, his availability, which is, if you look at this list, there are guys that have missed a lot more time than Terry has. his locker room, the quality in the locker room. The franchise is continuing to reach out to the community, his ability to his what he's done in the community. I mean, the intangibles that Terry brings are extremely valuable, I think, to this franchise. And then there's the one other aspect of it, Kev. You have to think about that. If the franchise is looking at Terry in a certain way, other players around the league are looking at the franchise and saying, if they're dealing with him this way,
right,
if I was to go there, how would they deal with me? There's the right. What if aspect. And I think all of it, it's based in frustration, I think, by Terry. I mean, he wasn't sitting there saying, hey, look, you know, I want this. I want, let me know what's going on. You know, I mean, and it's obviously, if he has an agent, the agent hasn't communicated with him, if there is a conversation going on. But at this point, we have to assume, which I hate to do, that there really hasn't been any conversation moving forward with the contract.
Yeah, you know, you said something, and we've talked a lot about it. It's like trying to just figure out who's got more leverage is interesting, because what you just described, you know, the team has to be careful because Terry's such a highly respected player, not just in this locker room, but with this fan base and around the league, and this is their first shot in this organization of negotiating a contract, so you don't want to look like you're being disrespectful or handling it in an untoward way. Also, they're in this window where they do need him because they think they have a shot to go super deep into the postseason and maybe win a Super Bowl. And at the same time, Terry's approaching age 30. He's under contract for one more year. And you went through the contracts, and we've been doing this for weeks, if not months now. It's hard if he's asking for Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, you know, elite-level money entering age 30. I just mentioned, Joe, that Amon-Ra St. Brown in Detroit, Brandon Sosna, who handles salary cap for our team now, Lance Newmark's the assistant GM, they did a deal with him a year and a half ago, $120 million, $30 million a year, $77 guaranteed. He was 24 when he signed that deal. Terry's going to be 30. He's 25 now, Amon-Ra is. And you could make the case that Amon-Ra St. Brown's a better player than Terry. You could. And I'm wondering if that's where it is. What do you think his value is? Have you given that thought?
I have not, because I'm not. But we'll take Amon-Ra St. Brown at 30 and his age. Okay, but here's the other thing is, if Terry, I think he'd play the year out. I don't think he'd walk from the year. I don't think
exactly.
He's that kind of a person. Okay,
right.
So, but if you take a look at where do you go after? Where do you, who are you going to plug in that spot? Look at our roster and tell me who you're going to plug in.
Yeah, that's when we get into this leverage thing, you know. But,
well,
you know, I pointed out, Joe, that Kansas City, Buffalo, and Baltimore don't have one wide receiver listed in this ranking by execs, coaches, and scouts that ESPN just put out for wide receivers. They don't have one receiver in the top 25 in the league. What they do have is an elite-level quarterback who elevates everything around him. But I'm with you. I'd rather have Terry than not have him.
I would, too. I think he, like I say, there's the intangibles that he brings, but also there's a tangible aspect. Plus, he knows the system. You know, Debo probably, you know, will have to learn a little bit. And they're two different kinds of football players, because people say, well, Debo Samuel can pick up the difference. I think it's an entirely different football player, type of football player, and will be used in an entirely different way. I don't know, but, you know, just based upon what you've seen in San Francisco and what his incredible abilities are working inside and his toughness, Terry's basically an outside guy. And he brings an element to the table that we haven't had. We finally have a quarterback who can throw the ball down the field. And this is the other thing that I sort of try. I've run this thing through my mind a thousand times. We are not quarterback strapped here yet.
Right.
Jaden's still under a rookie contract, which means that there are dollars, and he wouldn't be really eligible for the big numbers until Terry was 33.
Yeah, 27, the offseason at 27. We got two more years before they can even pay him. Yeah.
That's right, before they have to sit down and try to figure it out. So, I don't know, like I said, this is Adam's you know, this is the first time we've seen the negotiation, been familiar with the way the team wants to approach it. I think Terry's a great asset to this football team. I think he's a great asset to the community. I think he's an asset in the locker room. I think his, you know, his availability, that's the other thing, too, is if you look at this list of guys that I listed, there are a number of them here that have missed time. They haven't been available to play football at periods of time.
Right.
Terry hasn't been one of those guys. So, I mean, I think there's so many pluses, and I'd like this, I'd love to see this deal get worked out for our franchise and for him as well. You just, this is not the kind of blemish that you want going into training camp. You know, if somebody was to come out and say, you know, we're sitting down and we're talking, I think everybody would feel better. Not that anybody, not that I have no idea what the numbers are. I don't think anybody does except the principals that are involved. But to say, you know, we're talking, then people would feel better. I think generally speaking, the fans would say, okay, I'm glad they're in communication. Now, what happens after that, who knows? But the lack of communication is, I think, was frustrated Terry more than anything.
Yeah, he certainly mentioned that. And, you know, and I mentioned, and you're older than I am and have had more life experiences than me, but there's always his side, her side, and the truth is somewhere in between. So,
yeah.
Right?
But Kevin, that like I'm saying, wherever the numbers are, nobody knows.
Yeah, I'm talking about the communication, you know.
Yeah, there isn't it. That's what I'm saying.
It's a two-way street, yeah.
Right, yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure Terry's reached out and said, hey, look, you know, is this your bottom line? And all of a sudden, you know, from what I sensed in the press conference, there hasn't been a whole lot of communication back. And, you know, maybe Adam's just formulating a plan to be able to present in a different light. You just don't know. There's lots of what-ifs as far as this goes.
So I don't have a sense from the first 10 minutes of talking to you if you have sort of a side that you've taken, team or Terry, and maybe it's neither.
I would love Terry to be here. I think at $15 million, he is underpaid.
Well, of course,
but like
yeah.
I said, I don't know where they want to go. I think this is, you know, we talk about this opportunity. This is also the first time that Adam and has had a chance to be able to deal with a star player.
Right.
You know, we gave a lot of money to a lot of defensive linemen over the years. Wasted money, to be honest with you. Some wasted, some not. But in Terry's case, you know, you look at the production, you look at all the intangibles we talked about, you look at the comps, basically. It's like, you know, basically it's like shopping for a house. Look at the neighborhood that he's in and look at the comps in the neighborhood and where do you fit in?
Right,
and that's really where it is. So, I understand what I do understand about Terry's. I understand the frustration, the lack of communication. I've been in that situation. Nothing drives you crazier than the unknown in that regard. But you know, Adams, you know, he's got his job to do as the GM of this football team. Terry's got his job to do. I guess you could say the bottom line is if things don't get worked out, Terry McLaurin is going to be an asset to somebody somewhere. I'll give you an example. I played with Kyle Juszczyk in the American Century Championship this past weekend.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this.
San Francisco cut him, okay?
Right.
They cut him. All of a sudden, some suitors started coming for him. He got a new two-year deal at a better price. So, you know, it's like they probably looked at it. I think Kyle and John looked at, you know, what are we with him? What are we without him? And could we live without him? They found that they couldn't live without him. I would hate to see our situation get to a point where you find out that the void, that if Terry would not be there, the void would be bigger than we think to overcome.
I love having you on because sometimes we get to talk about, you know, when you played. So just real quickly, do you have a contentious contractual negotiation story?
No, never contentious. When I played, you know, you were just thankful to have a job without options. We didn't have any place to go. There wasn't any free agency.
Yeah, right.
You played your rear end off to keep your job, and you stayed on the field because if the other guy got in, you'd wind up with the Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe scenario or the Colin Kaepernick, Alex Smith scenario. You know, you just – somebody comes in, they do well, all of a sudden the team takes off, and, you know, you're left standing there watching. So, but I did have conversations with Mr. I did my own contract, my last contract.
Oh, you did?
There was no reason to have an agent because he was going to give me whatever he wanted to give me. Like I said, I had no leverage other than the fact that we won a world championship and I was MVP of the league, which, you know, carried, I don't know if it carried weight or not with Mr. Cook.
So that was the year after 83, that's you had 84. A contract negotiation?
Yeah, he would redo the deals before it was over.
Okay.
So my contract was, you know, ended in 83 and, you know, was, you know, the 82, 83 seasons were, you know, really terrific as far as a team goes. And, you know, what little bit I was able to contribute, I guess, helped. But when I sat down, I made 5 trips out to his house to sit down with him. And finally, you know, sat down with me and he presented me a contract. And I looked at Mr. Cook and I said, thank you so much. I said, this is wonderful. He says, no, it's not. It's great. And you deserve it. And he was very emphatic with everything he did. I used to go out to his
Was it great?
It was great. I was the 4th highest paid player in the National Football League.
Do you remember what it was for? I mean, I think people love to hear the stories from back then and then compare it to today.
Yeah, I was the 4th highest paid player in the league at $1 million a year.
Wow.
Warren Moon was the highest paid player in the league at 1.4.
Wow.
And it was, like I said, but the numbers sort of are one thing, but then where did you fit in with the other players? And this is, I think, what really is the bottom line here in Terry's situation is, where do you fit in with these other receivers, these other top 10 receivers economically? You know, are you part of that group? I think he is part of that group. Now, where does he fit in? That's I think, the question that remains.
All right. Exit question on Terry, because I want to get to Art and his jersey being retired and maybe a couple of other things. But how do you see this ending? Does he get a contract extension, you know, at some point between now and camp opening or at some point during camp? Does he play this year on the final year of his deal? Or does he, I guess the one other option would be he could, you know, try to publicly force a trade. Where are you?
I don't think he'd publicly force a trade. He's not that kind of person. Number two, he's not the kind of a guy who leaves his teammates hanging. You know, I think he would play this if things couldn't work out and didn't work out. I believe he would play. He would play this year at great risk to him economically going forward. And this is the first time we've seen this, so you don't know what position Adam is going to take. So it's hard to say that. You know, the organization will do this or the organization will do that. But I don't see Terry leaving his teammates in the lurch at all. I think he's that type of an admirable young man and that type of a committed athlete.
Well, it wouldn't benefit him to hold out. I mean, the way the rules are, first of all, they can't even take back the fine money anymore. But did you say this, or and did I miss it? Do you think he'll get a contract done?
I didn't say that. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like I said, what I basically said is this is the first time we've ever really seen this. With Adam and the organization, there's no history to base it off of. When you think about it, I mean, you know, they got contracts done out in San Francisco. They weren't,
and they got them done late, typically.
They always,
very late.
Like I said, it wasn't easy, but it did get done.
Yep.
So there's cautious optimism, as always. It seems like we're back to cautious optimism somehow, way, shape, or form.
All right, so a third teammate of yours is having his jersey retired. They announced yesterday that Art's jersey, number 81, will be retired on Sunday Night Football against Seattle, November 2nd. By the way, that's the throwback uniform number game number one of the 3 games they're going to wear them. Your thoughts on that?
I think it's fantastic. I think it took way too long for Art to get into the Hall of Fame. And it's great that you know, the organization, that, you know, the Commanders have expedited this for Art. No one should ever wear the jersey because there wasn't anybody like him. He was unique in so many ways: his size, his speed, his ability after he got his hands on the ball. You know, he was a converted running back, really, when we got him.
Yeah.
And it was so funny with Coach Gibbs. I mean, this is the genius of Joe Gibbs. Art could not get away from bump and run coverage. you could put somebody on him and he'd belly bump the guy and he'd hand fight him, you know, and he'd never really get into his routes. So Joe basically, you know, looked at what he had as far as the player, and he said, I'm just going to move him. Art did all of our move. Art did all the motions and everything. It was all Art, which made him, number one, have to learn multiple positions, and number two, gave him a chance to be able to get down the field and get into routes a lot easier and a lot quicker. And then when the ball got around him, he'd just snatch it all the time. I can't remember. I just can't remember a time, and I don't know if you can, when he really put the ball on the ground. I mean, he always caught the football, and he was a big target. And once he got his hands, like I said, that you know, then the running back came out in him. But it was he certainly was special, and I was honored to be able to play with him, and I was lucky to be able to have him as a part of our wide receiving corps.
Yeah, I during the years in which he wasn't in the Hall of Fame, and the case that Peter King and others were trying to make for keeping him out was he was a possession receiver. You know, Gary Clark was the true home run threat, you know, when he was playing with Gary, or Charlie Brown was, you know, in the early years. And I just never – I thought that was way – way incorrect. He could run deep, and you hit him on deep touchdown passes. The one in Philadelphia that kicked off 82 was a bomb to him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Art could run with anybody. I mean, because it's a little bit like, I guess you could say, A.J. Brown right now. You look at how big a receiver he is, and you say, well, you know, he's a guy that can't get down the field. That's not true. I mean, if I was going to pick a body type and say, okay, Art was like this, that would be the player. And you look at him go down the field, and you look at him adjust to the ball. You know, he's a very difficult guy to deal with because of his size. And Artie was the same way. He used to wear a necklace that had a dollar sign on it. I used to call him Big Money. That was my nickname for him.
Yeah. Can I tell you one thing about the decision to do Art now? Of course, Art's jersey deserves to be retired. He's on that list. I think Riggo's should have been done first before Art.
You know, it's certainly a decision by the organization. I think, like I say, I think it's great that he is there, and then whatever happens going forward. But it's nice to know that he's getting his retired.
All right. American Century, how'd you play? I actually didn't look up to see how you did. You play in this every year. You've been playing in it forever. You're an excellent golfer. I know you're not Steph Curry, and you're a lot older too, but tell me how you played and tell me who you played with and about the weekend.
Well, I did not play well.
Okay.
I just can't hit the ball as far. You know, you at a country club when you play, you can play certain tees that sort of suit your age or distance or abilities. I played back with everybody else and didn't play well. I mean, I couldn't hit a lot of the par fours, so it's drive, three wood, and then you got to hit the wedge close if you can to try and make a putt. If not, you know, you're making a bogey and that gets you nowhere. But I had way too many doubles. I think I had 14 doubles in the last 2 days. I just wasn't striking the ball well. I didn't hit it well. I didn't move the ball down the course.
Right.
It's the one. You know, the one thing is you if you watch the tours, if you watch the Champions Tour or the PGA Tour, the LPGA, anybody that hits the ball far has a really good chance because then you've got scoring clubs in your hands. When you're hitting, you know, four and five hybrids,
right?
Into
rescues,
greens. They're just not going to sit. They're not going to hold. So, I chipped pretty well because I had a lot of opportunity to do it. But it was a great experience. What you know, one thing about American Century as a company, they give away 40% of their gross profits to the Stauer Institute for research on disease and cures in Kansas City. And so, it's a fabulous organization. The American Century Championship was a great one. Joe Pavelski won it.
Yeah.
The hockey guys have such great eye-hand coordination.
Really, I mean, incredible.
And baseball, too. But it was a great time out in Lake Tahoe.
But you know, like I would imagine, I mean, for those that don't know, Joe was a multi-sport star in high school and played basketball, baseball, football. I would imagine you've got excellent hands around the green.
Yeah, it's the chipping was very good this year. Unfortunately, you know, like I said, I couldn't get the ball down the holes very well. And then putting is always a head case out there. I mean, you putt in the morning, it's a little quicker. If you just sort of try and walk it up to the hole, it goes left or goes right. If you hit it too hard and miss, you got 4 feet coming back. And that wears on you after 3 days.
Right.
Mentally it just drives you crazy.
All right, last one. I don't know if you saw this, but ESPN's been doing these positional rankings, but not, you know, based on analysts or reporters. It's coaches, execs, and scouts surveyed by ESPN to come up with the top 10. They've been doing this for like 6 years. And they had the top 10 quarterback list the other day. And Jaden was 5 behind Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Jackson, and then Jaden Daniels was the 5th best quarterback according to NFL people. Do you have a problem with that?
Not at all. Not at all. I think, you know, in his first year learning a system, and, you know, Cliff figuring out what he had at the quarterback position, the way he played, he earned the right to be there. You know, the other guys have had, you know, their pedigreed to a degree. Patrick, I still think, is the best. Lamar brings so much to the table, especially, you know, with Derek in the backfield with him. Josh, I thought, had a great year, made good decisions. He's always athletically been able to do the things, but I thought he made really good decisions. And, you know, Joe, you know, we know what Joe is. You know, you look at, like I said, complimented by the receivers that he has. I thought Jalen, you know, had a great year. I see other guys on the list, you know, Jared Goff, the receivers that he has had, the system. Now he's doing it and going to have to deal with a system change. So, you know, I think Jaden is positioned really where he should be in the top 5 in the National Football League.
It's always great to have you on. I hope you're doing well. Enjoy the rest of the summer, and hopefully we can catch up right before the season begins.
I look forward to it, Kev. Thank you.
All right, Joe Theismann, everybody, at Theismann7 on X on Twitter. All right, I don't know did everybody stay on hold, Max, or do we have to pitch for calls again?
No, everybody stayed on hold. I'm very impressed.
301-230-0980, if you're on hold, stay there. Your reaction to the Terry McLaurin press conference yesterday, and really, whose side are you on right now? Terry's side or the team's side? Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's morning lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Trivia question to start the show. What do Denton Day, Adam Peters, and Von Miller all have in common?
What is that?
All three of them wanted Von Miller to play for the Washington Commanders. I mean, how about a heck of a, not a news dump necessarily, but a news break? Von Miller signing with the Commanders at, like, what, 11 p.m. at night last night?
Adam, it was 10 o'clock last night. I think Linnell had just gone off the air.
He'd just gone off the air, and Von Miller puts pen to paper, or really graphic to Twitter, because that's how we found out about this. And Von Miller signs with the Washington Commanders. They got themselves a defensive end, another defensive end. And there are a lot of different ways to view this Von Miller signing, and we're going to attack this from all angles. This is the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. Kevin's out the next couple of days. He'll be back on Tuesday. So you get me from now until Monday. Our poll question is up on our Twitter page, at the Team 980. How do you feel about the Von Miller signing for the Commanders? It's a one-year deal. Do you love it? Do you like it? Do you not like it? Do you hate it? Go vote on our poll question. We will open up the phones in about 15 minutes at 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Anthony Armstrong joins us at 10:35. Former head coach Jay Gruden is going to join us at 11:35. 8:35. I woke up to this news, Max. As you know, I now wake up very, very early, which means by the time Von Miller signed this contract, I was dead asleep, although thunderstorms in the area did their best to keep me awake. That was God saying, hey, Von Miller's going to sign tonight.
It was violent last night.
It was very violent. My dog was a champ about it, though. I was very proud of him.
Good for him.
So I woke up to this news of Von Miller. But I did not see, because, you know, Twitter is this weird algorithm now. It always, when I open up Twitter, it's my For You page, not my following page.
Ugh.
So the For You page circulated Von Miller posting the graphic of himself. And I was like, hold on, pause, rewind. I need to make sure that this situation is straight here.
Hold all my calls.
Because you've seen this in the past, particularly this time last year, when a certain wide receiver who is very good friends with the quarterback here because they played their college ball at Arizona State together, it felt like he was posting and liking graphics of himself. Speaking of Brandon Ayuk, it felt like he was posting and liking graphics of himself in everyone else's jersey but the 49ers. So I had to make sure that what Von Miller was doing was not a troll. I had to make sure that what Von Miller was doing was not like a bunch of teenagers being teenagers and hacking into a Twitter account and saying, well, we're going to put him in a Commanders jersey. I did my due diligence, found out that this is true, that it was Von Miller signing. This is a deal that I really, really enjoy for the Commanders. In fact, I went so far as to say on our poll question that I love it. Is this a lifetime fix or at least a multi-year fix at a position of need? No, it is not that. You signed a 36-year-old guy to a one-year contract. This is more likely than not going to be Von Miller's last season in the NFL. So it is not an all-time fix, so to speak, but you get a guy that at the very least has the ability to cause a little bit of havoc. You get a guy that has the ability to take some of the younger players under the wing a little bit and say, hey, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, you got a little something going on. Allow me, someone who played the position that you are playing at the highest of levels. Because there was very much a point in time where Von Miller was not just the best defensive player in the NFL. You could make an argument, pound for pound, the best football player in the NFL. I mean, the man literally carried Peyton Manning to a Super Bowl. With Peyton Manning had a broken freaking neck. So adding that to this roster, in and of itself, I think is a huge benefit. You also address a position that they have not done a great job addressing. One of my biggest issues with what they have been doing this offseason is that they have not had a long-term fix at defensive end. Dietrich Wise might be somebody we don't really know. The contract they signed him to was a one-year deal, which leads me to believe that they don't really know, because if they did know, they would have signed him to a longer-term deal. Similar to what they did with Frankie Louvu last year, who, by the way, All-Pro. Similar to what they did with Dorrance Armstrong, which was not an All-Pro, but they believed in him for 3 years. They signed Javon Kinlaw to a multi-year deal. If they're only signing Dietrich Wise to a one-year deal, you are clearly skeptical. So Von Miller is not fixing the long-term problem, but you at least add someone that is going to help the defensive line out. You look at his numbers over the past few years, and it's not a lot to be overly impressed with. 6 sacks combined in the last 2 years. In 2023, he had 0 sacks. He was battling some injuries, only played 12 games. But only playing 12 games and having 0 sacks to show for it is not a good number. That is not good. But in 2024, when he was much more healthy, he had 6 sacks. So I'm hoping if you get a healthy Von Miller, you get somewhere around that number. And I think that's what's important to take into consideration here. What is successful for Von Miller is not going to be what would have been successful if the team made a move for Trey Hendrickson. If you make a move for Trey Hendrickson, you give up draft capital, you then turn around and sign him to a multi-year extension in the neighborhood of $30 million when you already have someone on this roster that wants $30 million per year, allegedly, if you believe Ian Rapoport. But if you make that move for Trey Hendrickson, you are expecting 17.5 sacks again. With Von Miller, you're not expecting that. My expectation for Von Miller is very, very simple. I want 4 good games. If you can give me 4 good games, like 4 really, really good games, then a one-year deal for a 36-year-old is a great move. considering that Washington last year played 19 games, you're kind of hoping that maybe this year they played 20 games or 19 if things go really well and they get the bye, but, you know, baby steps. You're hoping they played 20 games. If Von Miller has a really good game once every five outings, I will take that at 36 years old. I'm not asking him to come in here and have double-digit sacks, although that would be nice. He's going to be more of what I feel like is a spot rusher, very similar to what Ryan Kerrigan was in Ryan Kerrigan's final year here. If you go back to 2020, that's when Chase Young was playing his best here in D.C. Montez Sweat was playing really well in D.C. You had that defensive line that we thought was going to carry this franchise for years and years to come. Oh, what a time that was, at least mentally. But if Von Miller can do something similar to what Ryan Kerrigan did that year, I would call this a success. The days of him getting 13 and a half sacks are completely done with, but he can still be a very good spot rusher. So I'd like this, Max. I was very thrilled that they signed Von Miller. Von Miller moves the needle for me a lot more than some of the other guys that were on the open market, with all due respect to the mighty Preston Smith, who spent a good chunk of time here to open his career. If it was between 36-year-old Von Miller or, what is Preston Smith? I think he's like 31.
I wanted to say 34, 35, but I'm not 100% sure anymore.
Honestly, if it's 36-year-old Von Miller or 30-year-old Preston Smith, I'm going to take 36-year-old Von Miller.
Preston Smith's 32, you were right.
32-year-old Preston Smith, I'm going to take Von Miller. Because Preston Smith just doesn't have the juice like that. What did you think of this? Were you as thrilled as I was to wake up and see this rendering?
Yeah, I mean, I saw it last night as I was like getting ready to go to bed, and then my Twitter timeline blew up and was like, hey, Von Miller. So I don't fall into the love it category for obvious reasons. I mean, he's a 36-year-old and it's a one-year deal, but I do fall into the like it category. I think he has a lot to offer. I think four games, like you said, if you get, what, six sacks for a 36-year-old on a minimum deal?
If you get
on, like,
six sacks
minimum
from
deal,
Von Miller at the age of 36, that is a great deal.
That is a win for me. So, yeah, I'm very excited for this year. I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see what Joe Witt decides to do with Frank Luvu and Von Miller, because that might be hell for
There's
certain
tackles. There's a level of creativity that you now have at your display if you are Joe Witt Jr. You had it at times last year with Dante Fowler Jr. because Fowler went on that run in the middle portion of the season where he became a machine, a sack machine for all intents and purposes. You just ran into the issue at the end of the year where you realized, as great as he is at getting after the passer, he is inadvertently terrible at stopping the run.
Exactly.
The hope is that Von Miller will at least be good at both of those things. Now, he's never been specifically known as a great run defender. He is a pass rusher first, and again, that's why he was one of the best players in the NFL. That year where Denver won the Super Bowl, he didn't just lead them over the Carolina Panthers that year, who had this crazy dynamic offense. Who was their head coach again? Not important. He didn't even know they were in the Super Bowl. He didn't know.
We could be eliminated?
He could be eliminated in the Super Bowl. I thought I had one more game. But he took that defense and took down the MVP, but he'd also taken down Tom Brady the 2 weeks before in the AFC playoffs. He had taken down Andrew Luck in the AFC playoffs. Peyton Manning wasn't doing anything. The guy couldn't throw the ball more than 15 yards. It was the Von Miller-led defense that was lifting them up. I know he's not that anymore, but I feel like adding, it's never a bad thing to me when you are trying to build a culture of winning and trying to build a championship culture to have guys that have legitimate experience at the championship level. And you want to make fun of all the old dudes.
Damn good.
Culture, right? We love
it. You know, the culture is actually damn good.
Damn good.
Damn good. Still waiting for that. But if you want to make this culture a championship level, you surround the roster and the young guys with a bunch of guys that have done it at a championship level. So you want to make fun. I've seen the memes. We saw the memes last year of Jerry Rice, Dan Marino, that Madden commercial where they're dapping each other up and they're saying this is what Zach Ertz and Bobby Wagner and all these dudes are. You can make that same argument in 2025, just adding Von Miller to the party. However, that culture influencing on the young guys like your Javonte Jean-Baptiste, like your Ben Sinnott, who you're hoping are going to be here for a long time, like a Frankie Luvu, or in the instance of Bobby Wagner, if you want to get really young, like a Jordan McGee, who they feel really, really good about, then you're cooking with gas.
Yeah, people like to crap all over this, you know, signing older veteran, the unction, as some call it, as me and Brian have affectionately referred to it as. But like, if once you reach a certain point in your career where you can't, you know, do the things that you were used to do, you move on to the next part of your career, which is passing that on to the next generation.
Which is being the old dude.
Exactly.
Is being the old dude, being the veteran, and if you are lucky, you get a situation like you have with Zach Ertz, who loves every bit of his time here in D.C. You have a situation like Bobby Wagner, who loves every bit of his time here in D.C. to the point where when these two guys retire, Bobby Wagner, at least certainly, because he's for sure going to be a Hall of Famer. I don't know that Zach Ertz will be a Hall of Famer, but he will consider himself both an Eagle and a Commander. Bobby Wagner will consider himself both a Seahawk and maybe a Ram, but a Commander. If Von Miller has a couple, one good year here, just one at 37, that might be time to, you know, tap out a little bit. But if Von Miller has just one good year, he'll be a Bronco, Ram, Bill, and Commander. You know, it won't just be a footnote, because it's felt like for the longest time when you sign some of the older guys, or at least in previous regimes, they would end up just being like the time in Washington was a footnote. And they kind of wanted to, you know, maybe I'm not going to put this. I don't like it when people scroll that deep in my Pro Football Reference page. So I'm optimistic. I feel really good about the Von Miller signing. Again, if I get four good games for him, that is a win at 36 years old. There is one problem I have with this, and this was a problem that I noticed immediately.
Let's hear it.
I saw the rendering that Von Miller put up, which I assume was AI, either that or his graphics team is on it.
I think I know where you're going with this.
24 for a pass rusher sucks.
Not great.
That's a tough number on the eyeballs for a pass rusher. You want to be 24 as a running back? Sick. You want to be 24 as a defensive back? Sick. End of list. That is where the buck stops and starts in terms of where that number looks good. 24 as a pass rusher? Yuck. It just does not. Even I was going back and forth with a few of our listeners and fans on Twitter, fans of the team, that is. Even he used to wear 40 in Los Angeles and Buffalo. 40 is still a little bit of a tough sell. 40 is a weird number in pro football. I don't know that 40 looks good anywhere necessarily. That might be one of the ugliest numbers. But he wore 40. In Denver, he wore 58. Tyler Owens wears 40 here. Jordan McGee wears 58 here. I don't know that Von Miller is so sold on those numbers. I mean, he tweeted out himself in 24. I would assume that is him planting his flag and saying, I'm going to take number 24. If you have an Antonio Gibson jersey, congratulations. You can repurpose that if you know how to sew or are just really good with duct tape. But 24 looks ugly on a pass rusher.
I'm going through the Pro Football Reference page because when you mentioned 40 being a weird number, I'm like, who is the most famous 40?
And Pat Tillman.
I really, yeah, that's probably.
Yeah, did Tillman wear 40 or did he wear 41? I think he wore 40. But he's more famous just because of some of the after.
Well, yeah, it wasn't like the football stuff that Pat Tillman was famous for.
Yeah, just because of some of the stuff that he stood for. But I don't know, like, I can't think of a player that wore number 40 and I was like, this is great. Like, this looks beautiful.
Yeah, it's a very weird.
It's a very, very odd number.
Yeah.
It's a very odd number. So he's going to wear 24 at least now. I'm excited to see Von Miller. I also like, let me just double check. I'm pretty sure he put up a rendering of himself in burgundy and gold, which
I think, was it the white jersey or was it the, because I noticed he posted the white jersey, the white throwback, but he still had the old helmet without the extra lines up top.
Yeah, so he had the, he posted burgundy and gold. He also put the Captain C on the chest, like, yeah, let's bump the brakes a little bit there. But he posted the picture in legitimate burgundy and gold. So for that, Von Miller is already off on the right foot here. He knows how much we love the burgundy, not the cherry red, not the cranberry red, whatever the hell they called it. It's not burgundy, but he posted himself in the real burgundy and gold. I want to hear from you. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. How do you feel about the Von Miller signing, and what are your realistic expectations for him at 36 years old? My expectations, I want four good games from the 36-year-old pass-rushing specialist. I want your thoughts at 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on a Thursday. Von Miller signed to the Commanders late last night. We are also hoping and praying that Terry McLaurin will sign an extension with the Commanders sometime between now and training camp starting in about 10 days. Joining us now on the phone, former Redskins head coach Jay Gruden, kind enough to give us a few moments here. Coach, first and foremost, appreciate it. Hope you're doing well. What are your thoughts on the Von Miller signing that happened late last night?
Well, it's that's a good sign. A veteran guy who knows how to rush the passer. You know, he's not going to be much of a run-stopping guy in Coach Quinn's defense, but they do need some juice on third down and five plus. So he'll give them that added spark, so to say. You know, and a one-year deal. There's no, you're not tied to him for a long time. But it's good. They had a chance in OTAs to look at some of their young pass rushers, see what they had, and they probably realized that, hey, we need a little spark. We need one more guy that can come in on third down and provide a spark. And whether he makes the team or not is yet to be seen. But he'd be a good addition for those situational type games.
What is the benefit of having a guy like Von Miller for some of the younger players like a Javonte Jean-Baptiste on this roster?
Well, he knows how to rush the passer. You know, a lot of it, he was in his prime was athletically. He's like really gifted. It's hard to teach that athleticism, that speed, that ability to bend. His closing rate, I mean, it's hard to teach that, but he does have great hands, knows how to work against the tackle and his techniques. And, if the tackle oversets, he knows how to use his hands to get underneath them. If he short sets them, he can swipe them and get around them. And so a lot of different techniques he can use, but his athletic ability is what made him Von Miller. He doesn't quite have that full athletic ability anymore, but he's still an effective pass rusher, and it can help the younger guys work on some things.
What have you noticed over the last couple of weeks, but specifically the last couple of days here when it comes to the Terry McLaurin contract extension debacle that has seemingly taken place?
Yeah, it's a tough situation for everybody involved, especially Terry and obviously Adam Peters and Coach Quinn stuck right in the middle of it. He probably wants to take Terry McLaurin's side, but he can't really do that. He's got to be on Team Washington football, Washington Commanders right now. So I think, it's a helpless feeling. And we were similar with Trent Williams when, he didn't want to come back. And obviously the Kirk Cousins debacle that we had there. So I kind of understand it. You want the players back in your building because you want to coach the best players, but you also have to, leave it to Adam Peters, the GM, the president, the owner to get it done. And sometimes it doesn't get done. And you got to move on and coach the guys you have.
I'm glad you mentioned the Trent and the Kirk situation that you had to deal with. How does that impact the way that you start your preparation, at least to this point in the season, not knowing whether a guy is going to be there or not?
Well, Kirk was going to be there. That was really just, we couldn't get him to an extension. Trent was different. Trent, I kind of figured Trent wasn't going to be there, so we prepared. We signed Donald Penn and tried to get some young guys ready, having a 37-year-old Donald Penn instead of Trent Williams, a little bit different dynamic. You have to kind of plan your pass protection a little bit different. You got to chip. You got to do all kinds of different things to help out the old man. Donald did a great job. He came in and busted his tail, but he's no Trent, not at that time. He was at one time. He was pretty good. But, that was a tough dynamic. And then, obviously, losing Jordan Reed to injury. We had those injuries before, too, so that's hard. You just got to try to do the best you can with the players that you have. And, that's what Coach Quinn's going to do. Fortunately, they got a young rookie that can really run. They got Debo in there. They got McCaffrey in his second year, which is good. They got Michael Gallup with some experience. So they have some guys in-house, obviously Debo, that can make some plays. And Zach Ertz is still in-house, and the running game should be good. And obviously Jaden Daniels is the key. So hopefully Terry will say, hey, maybe I'll take a little bit less money and play with this unbelievable quarterback in a situation they have at Washington. Sometimes the grass isn't always greener for a few more million dollars somewhere else. So I don't know. I love Terry. I think he's a great player, a great leader, a great person. So you want to reward guys like that. So I'm torn. I want Team Terry for sure, but, it's a tough situation.
I know you have a good relationship with him. Have you spoken with him? Maybe not about the contract stuff, but just about what last season ended up being and finally getting a legit quarterback for him.
No, I haven't spoken to him in a while. I haven't spoken to any players and some of the retired guys I have. But, I just know what type of guy Terry is, and he'll make it work, whatever happens for him and his future. But, he's looking at Garrett Wilson. He's looking at the other guys to get contracts. And Terry has done a lot for this franchise. He really has. He's a fan favorite. He's a team locker room favorite. I don't know what the risk is for paying him some money. This is the type of guy. He's the type of guy you want to pay because you know he's going to be there. He's going to be in shape. He's a great leader, a great person, a great player. He's very unselfish. He'll do everything you want him to do. So if you're going to pay somebody, that's the type of guy you want to pay. I don't know what the confusion is, but maybe they're bracing for the richest contract in the history of football in Jaden Daniels in a year or two. So I don't know.
Jay Gruden with us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day sitting in for Kevin here on the team 980. You had mentioned Deebo Samuel, Coach. You obviously are an offensive mind. How would you utilize Deebo Samuel with some of the talent that is around this offense?
You know, first of all, we got to get him healthy. That's number one. You know, the things that makes Deebo is his ability to do some of the things that not many receivers can do. Line up in the backfield, the jet sweeps, the short passes that he can run people over, and him in the running game where he's blocking safeties and digging out safeties and cracking defensive ends and linebackers. This is a physical specimen. It is a special player after the catch. So you don't have to throw the ball deep to him. You can throw the ball intermediate and short and screens, and he'll make big plays for you. So he's got to be healthy to do that. He's got to have his shoulder healthy. He's got to be able to run people over because that's who he is. He's not an elusive guy. He's a power player. So hopefully he gets that power and that strength back in his shoulders and his knees and legs, and he can be that type of guy because he's one of my favorite receivers that have played in the last 5-6 years. He is a dynamic player and a physical. I love those big physical guys that can – that's the type of mentality you want on offense, physicality, and he brings that to the table.
How would you balance using him on the outside versus potentially using him in the backfield in ways that San Francisco did in his final few years there?
Well, a lot depends on, you know, Austin Eckler and B-Rob and all that, how they're doing. You might not need to use him in the backfield, but a lot of times you get people in different defensive packages and you line up an empty and then you bring back a receiver into the backfield. Teams have their empty automatic coverages, and all of a sudden now there's a back, and all of a sudden they get a little confused. You hand it to them right on the inside zone or outside zone or whatever it might be, or zone read with Jaden Daniels, and defenses get on their heels, and they don't really have to adjust to it. So I wouldn't use them. I would try to give them the ball at least 4 or 5 times in the running game, and then 3 or 4 times in the jet sweeps and all that's in the screens, and then, you know, the drop back game. So I would love to see them get 9-10 touches a game somehow, some way.
Jay Gruden with us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day sitting in for Kevin. What do you think went wrong, at least statistically, in the game for Brian Robinson last year?
I don't know. I think the ability for Jaden to really run too, use his legs, and him throwing the ball as effectively as he does probably took a little bit more. I think Cliff, as a play caller, is like, you know, why am I going to hand the ball off here when I can throw the ball with this Jaden Daniels cat, you know. Let's put the ball in Jaden's hands a little bit more than B-Rob. You know, but I think they'll utilize B-Rob again more. You know, they got the rookie they drafted in the 7th round. Maybe he'll push him a little bit. Eckler is back, I assume, right?
Yes.
Still there? Yeah. So they got Eckler. So they got 3 or 4 guys that can really hurt you or do some different things. B-Rob's more of a between-the-tackle guy. Eckler's obviously a space player. And then, this other rookie they got is probably a little bit of a combination of both. So they got a good 3-headed monster, but I just think the versatility that Jaden brings to the table and the just the things that he can do with the ball in his hands, you want in his hands more often than not.
Coach, there has been a conversation nationally. This is not a local conversation. I think most of the local people realize the difference. But there's been a conversation nationally fearing that Robert and Jaden will have a very similar year too. What are some of the differences between Jaden and Robert as players and quarterbacks?
Well, that's the most ignorant thing I've ever heard. Jaden is a special kid. I mean, nothing against Robert, but Jaden is a skilled passer. What he did at LSU throwing the football, he played for 5 years in college. I think Robert played for 1. So Jaden's a lot more experienced. He's a lot more fine-tuned as a quarterback. His footwork, his anticipation, his ability to drop balls in small areas and touch and then scramble with an awareness to look down the field and find people as a passer and to hurt you with his legs. He just has a combination of everything that you want in a quarterback. He's the type of quarterback that if you're drawing up a quarterback, this is the type of guy I want. I want a guy that can drop back and throw it on time and accurately. I want a guy that can escape pressure. I want a guy that can do some zone read stuff. I want a great leader. I want a great – he's got every intangible that you want. You know, Robert was not very he was not very adept to the drop back passing game. He played at Baylor, which wasn't a really a drop back school. It was a one read type game and run. He's a great player at Baylor, won the Heisman, had a great rookie year. But then when he had an injury, he tried to transition into a true drop-back quarterback. That quite, he wasn't quite ready for that. Jaden, on the other hand, was ready for that, playing at LSU with Coach Nussmeier, and the offensive coordinator did a great job in the passing game with, you know, the receivers that he had. That, you know, it's, they're just totally different, and Jaden's just much more experienced in the fact of playing the quarterback position than Robert was in year two.
How do you think Jaden can get better in year number two?
Just continue to grow with Cliff and learn the system and learn defenses, study fronts, study blitzes, make sure you know where your receivers are at all times, and protect yourself. You know, I just want to make sure he continues to work on protecting himself, you know, near the sideline, all that stuff, and which he did a great job of last year. And pick a spots. You know, it is, let's not run between the tackles too often. You know, if we do, let's get down quickly and understand that you are the face of the franchise. You have the keys in your hand. You are running the show. They need you on the field, so protect yourself. But there's really he's going to get better and better, which is very scary for the National Football League.
How much do you think Laremy Tunsil is going to benefit that maturation process for Jaden and allow him to allow the team to keep him upright?
Yeah, he's one of the better pass blockers. He's got to stay away from the penalties. You know, he had like 19 or 20 of them last year, and if he can do that, then yeah, from passing situations, known passing situations, to have a left tackle that is that skilled in pass protection is very, very important, because you know, Washington's pretty fortunate. They played with the lead a lot of times last year. They never had to really be in known passing situations, third and eight, or down two touchdowns with, you know, a quarter to go. But if they are in that situation, now they have a left tackle that can really protect his blind side, which is critical.
What do you think about the actual Burgundy coming back, albeit only for three games, but it'll be nice to not see that, you know, cranberry-ass red that they gave us the past few years?
It should always be Burgundy. We all know that. And hopefully that'll be a mainstay. And maybe even change a name or something like that. That would be awesome as well.
Do you think that eventually those are going to be, those uniforms will be back in like 27 or 26, that they'll be the full-time whites again?
I think with the demand that the fans have on it, I think this is a fan-driven league for sure. You know, I think he's got to see that. And, you know, but who knows? With Jaden, what he's doing and the success that they're having, I think the fans will buy any damn color as long as they're winning, right? So I don't think the colors really matter. I think the winning divisions, winning the NFC East, winning the NFC Championship, and winning Super Bowl is really all the fans want.
All right, Coach, I'll get you out of here on this. We started with the Terry McLaurin contract. We will end with the Terry McLaurin contract. Do you eventually think that it gets done and he is happy and on the team week one?
I do think it gets done. Like I mentioned before, if you're going to pay a player, you want a guy that's going to be on time. He's going to be in shape. He's going to bust his ass. He's unselfish. He's a great kid, works his ass off, and very, very, very productive. So when you check all those boxes, who else are you going to pay? Who else do you want to pay, man? Pay the man his money. Let's get him in town.
Coach, greatly appreciate it. Appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of the offseason. I know it's hot out here, but hopefully you're playing some good golf.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm playing right now at 12:30, cart path only. It's going to be miserable, but I'm going to fight through it because I'm a tough guy.
Yeah, battling adversity. That's what all great players do, right?
Exactly right.
All right, Coach, appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, fellas. See you.
That is Jay Gruden, who is good enough to join us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. You can tweet me at the Denton Day. Some good stuff there from Jay Gruden. I really wanted to ask him about that comparison with Robert and Jaden. I knew he was going to make a comment about the team. Look, I get it. I know my audience here. But I wanted to ask him about that conversation of Jaden and Robert, because one of the craziest clips that I have seen in between filling in for Kevin Max was when Cam Newton asked that question to Wale.
Sure.
Like, that felt like a weird part of the simulation where a football player is asking a rapper about football. Normally feels like the other way around. But yeah. I love Wale, and Wale knows ball, so I understand it. But it was very odd for Cam Newton to be the one asking about Robert and Jaden. You would think, of all people, that Cam Newton would be very much on top of the differences. Like, that to me felt like a question that is more served for your get-ups, your first takes.
Sure.
You know, like, that is a very much an ESPN kind of question when they're just trying to look for something to clip on social. Maybe that is what the Cam Newton podcast, 4th and 1, I think it's called, was trying to do. But like, if you watch the games, which we do here, the difference between Robert and Jaden is substantial when it comes to playing the quarterback position. I know Robert had a great year. I'd loved Robert for that great year. Loved in the past tense, because that love does not currently exist. But in the past tense, I'd loved Robert for that great year. But these two guys are completely different players. Completely different. And some of the things that Jaden did so well as a rookie, which led to him being the top five quarterback in ESPN's list that was put together by coaches, scouts, and executives, that is going to lead to him likely being, I would say for sure, top 30, maybe top 25 or top 20 in the NFL's top 100 list, is because of the way that he was able to process and be both a legitimate pocket passer while also having the dual threat ability that only somebody like a Lamar Jackson, or in turn, like Robert had in 2012. But it's just such a rare breed to be able to be as good of a runner as Jaden was while also being as good of a passer. Like, comparing Robert to Jaden feels just completely out of left field at this point. And really, like, you want to talk about, does somebody know ball or not? These are the questions that you ask in DC. RG3 or Jaden? If anybody even hesitates, they don't know ball. You ask them in basketball, Wall or Beal? If they even hesitate, they don't know ball. If someone says Bradley Beal over John Wall, kick them to the curb. Throw them in the Potomac.
Maybe punch them in the face.
Maybe punch them in the face. Robert or Jaden? I like that answer from Jake Gruden. We will continue to discuss the Terry McLaurin contract extension and just what we are learning from Adam Peters. Plus, we got a little bit of Denton's Daily News coming in hour number three. So we will get to that. Take some more of your phone calls at 301-230-0980. This is the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day, sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.